episode of Inside the Recording Studio. I am Jody Whitesides, and with me, as always, is Mr. Chris Hellstrom. How are you today, Chris?
Well, I'm awake now after that.
Yeah,
good. Yeah, I'm good. Jody, how are you?
I'm still alive and kicking, so this is a good sign.
Sweet. Well, that's what we're looking for.
Yes. Right?
So today's topic, we had a couple of people write in and ask again. This is something that we kind of covered in the past, how to organize files and session data on, should we have one drive, should we have several drives, that kind of thing. So we thought this deserved another episode.
Another poke and a prod.
Exactly. There's a lot of things that obviously come into this, and all things are fluid. I don't know about you, Jody, but besides our listeners writing us, I see this kind of thing on forums all the time where people ask about thinking about getting this laptop. Are these specs good enough? Mm-hmm. Or somebody might ask me, so I'm looking to get something, and what kind of specs should I be looking for? I want to get this right off the top because it kind of bugs me. I think it's almost criminal that some laptops ship with less than a terabyte drives these days.
That's a good way of saying it. It's almost criminal.
Yeah, because, you know, people, I get a great deal on this, and will this work for Logic or whatever? And it's got like a 256 or like 512 gigabyte drive. The answer to that is more often than not, no. If you're going to do some serious lifting and doing some music on this, that's not good enough.
I don't.
Do you have a thought on that?
I rarely use a laptop for recording. The fact that I do on occasion makes me happy that I had replaced the internal drive with a much larger drive.
So what do you have now? You have a terabyte now.
Yeah, I believe it's a terabyte in there.
Yeah.
It's an SSD, which also sped up the laptop. It's been a while since I've purchased a new one, and I do plan on purchasing a new one in the not-so-distant future. Of course, when I do, it will be 1 or 2 terabytes that I decide to get, just for the sheer size of things that happen these days. My studio machine, on the other hand, totally different story. It is a 1 terabyte drive, but I never record to the internal drive. I have a large drive setup that is connected through Thunderbolt that I use.
So before we go into the details of that, because I do a very similar thing, if we take the concept of the laptop, there are obviously pros and cons of going to the internal drive. One being that should you choose to like go to the internal drive in a laptop, there's a couple of things that we need to consider. Mm-hmm. If you're going to it, you're going to do all your recording to the internal drive, you need to have a relatively sizable drive.
Yes.
And no matter really how sizable that is, you're going to at some point probably run out of space.
This is true.
Unless you're going for like a 4 terabyte or something. And budget's not an issue, you know?
Well, the other thing to consider is the recording quality in terms of your sample rate and your bit depth that you're using.
Yeah, because that plays a massive part, right? If you want to minimize stuff and go to 44.1 and you're good with that, then, hey, fill your boots, right? But also another thing is not just with the recording aspect of it. If you need to bring sample libraries with you that you work, let's say that you're composing and you're traveling and you need to have these there,
yep,
that takes up a sizable chunk of that drive as well. So can really, really quickly eat up all the space that you thought you had.
For sure. For sure.
I have a composer friend. He said he uses internal storage for a lot of his sample libraries. And that shocked me a little bit. There is that part of, if you're now running on Apple Silicon, that you don't need as much RAM if they're on sort of like that unified memory, right?
Sure.
And it's sitting on the internal. I think that's kind of unusual, and it's not a system that I would recommend to anybody.
So, to run your sample library internally?
Yeah, running everything internally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Part of that is my ingrained workflow. I'm just bringing that up that it can be done. You can do it. Doesn't mean that it's recommended for everybody.
Sure.
That's probably what makes this topic kind of confusing to a lot of people because, well, so-and-so does this and I get this piece of advice from GearSpace or whatever. You can make it work, but we're going to talk about what you and I recommend anyway.
Sure.
So we're both leaning on external drives. Why do you use external drives, Jody?
Organization. Straight up organization. I have a singular SSD right now that I use for all of my samples. And I find that it's fast enough and large enough to hold the entire library. I've had no issues with drive speed being a problem, even with massive libraries. Now, if I was doing a gigantic 120-piece orchestral type thing, I might think different. I might break up samples for percussion and woodwinds and other things to separate drives individually, but I would still keep them on some sort of RAID enclosure so that they're all coming through. I record to an external drive. I back up to a RAID system. That RAID system is not fast enough to generally play things back, mainly because it is a spinning drive. It is not an SSD. And spinning drives are still substantially cheaper and a little bit more trustworthy to me for long-term archival purposes.
Than an SSD?
Really? Than an SSD, yeah. I've heard that SSDs could have problems if they're spiked with some electricity, and that kind of scares me.
Any kind of storage scares me, to be honest, because, you know, I was thinking about this before we were recording, and the harsh reality, especially with spinning drives, is that it is just a matter of when and not if you're going to have a drive fail.
That's any drive, though. That's SSD or spinning drive.
Sure. Fingers crossed, at this point, I've had a much higher ratio of spinning drives go south on me.
Sure.
And it's not fun. So, but it is one of those that you should take into consideration. Backup, we'll go into that a little bit more with the backup storage, but it is a cheaper solution at this point, unless you're running that drive heavy all day for all your tracking and stuff. You're less likely to get issues with it. That's what I tell myself anyway.
Right. And in terms of recording, I record to an SSD drive as well. Yeah. My archival purposes, that is a spinning drive. And it is much larger than most SSDs at a substantially cheaper cost.
This is true.
And it is a RAID system, so it's backing itself up with multiple copies, so to speak, as it does the backup. Thus, if I lose one drive, I can replace the drive and it will recreate that data.
Yeah.
That's another reason for why I use a RAID system for backing up. So that's an archival and recording kind of setup for me. And I'm pretty sure it's the same for you.
Yeah, I have the same way of thinking in that I have a couple of sample drives. Now, the reason why I have a couple of sample drives is because I have one drive just dedicated to Superior Drummer. It's a tune track drive. It's a smaller SSD drive, but it's like, hey, I'll use it for that. I have another drive that stores all my sampled libraries. And then, like you mentioned, I have another SSD that I do all the projects for and stuff. All the recording and all that kind of stuff goes to a specific SSD drive. In this case, it's a 1 terabyte. I used to use that same workflow when it was spinning drives. So it wasn't like this is a new thing. It is one of those that you can take a drive with you should you need to go somewhere else and bring it with you. You have the project there. But it also is, to me, it's cleaner to have an organization where it's like, this is your project drive. Yep. And then, of course, like you, I get pretty anal with a file structure and everything in there as well. But that's just to kind of keep track of stuff. I would highly recommend, when you're doing like your projects and everything, to not burden your internal drive with that. So I would keep that on an external. But like you said, the speed of the SSD drives, even the connection, even if it's Thunderbolt 2, but today like Thunderbolt or USB-C are plenty fast.
Yeah. There's no longer a bottleneck now with drive speeds and USB-C or Thunderbolt connections at this point.
The only thing I would consider to have like a little bit of a pause with is if you are on the system and you have limited amount of ports on it, that can quickly eat up, right? So it can be tempting to just have, oh, I'll just do everything on the internal. Mm-hmm. Let's say on a MacBook Pro, I think there's only 2 Thunderbolt ports on it. So you might be looking like at a dock situation or something, and that can be a little bit scary because It's just another peripheral to carry with you, right?
Sure.
External drives all day, man. That's how I do it. And I had an incident a couple of years ago that I've talked about before where I had my backup drive that went south. Ended up losing a lot of data that I didn't have multiple backups of, which was my problem. Mm-hmm. But at that stage, I got a RAID system as well. Just like you, it's a mirrored RAID.
Yeah.
So it has two spinning drives on it, and they're both the same. So if one of those drives should go south, it still lives on the other one. It's a simple matter of plugging another one in. And like I said, they're cheap. And it's a great security blanket to have.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree. Yeah. Now let's move on to some session file organization.
Sure. I keep everything on the external, my music drive, in that there would be generally a folder for my own stuff, or if it's another artist, they will have another folder without, so I keep everything organized. In there, I save everything to like the folder structure in Logic. So what that means is I don't save it as like a project file that contains everything.
Right.
I don't like that.
I'm not a fan of it either.
Yeah, I like to see it. For my money, it's just a better way to go. But then there obviously each song will have a folder and that contains everything pertinent to that track. So I do backups for samples that are being used in that song or mm-hmm. whatever happens to be. Everything goes in there. So there's the project file, there's the audio file, there's sample instrument files. All those things live in there as well. And that's the way you do it as well, I believe.
It is. My file structure, if I look at it from the situation of the organization, the outward folder, just like you mentioned, you have a folder for yourself and you have a folder for each client. I do the same thing. I have an outward structure of each folder is either stuff that is mine or stuff that is clients. And inside there, I have a client folder. And inside the client folder, there might be like an album or project folder. And then inside the project folder or album folder will be each individual song folder as well.
Right. Yeah.
And much like you, each song folder is going to get all the files that relate to that song. The DAW session file, the DAW mix file, the DAW maybe master file if the mastering engineer is going to give it to me, all the audio files in an audio file folder. If there are samples, much like you, there will be a sample folder that contains all the samples that are used in whatever virtual instrument or reverb file there is for that. There will be a sampler.
Just to clarify that, sorry to interrupt you there, but in Logic, for those people who are not Logic users, when you use the sampler in Logic, you have that option to save the session with all the samples that are used in that instrument.
Yes.
So it's not like you go in, oh, I used Sunset Strings from Realitone, and I'm saving all the samples from that. That's not what we're talking about.
No, like, it's for internal Logic samplers.
Right, exactly. That can sound a little confusing. It's not like every sample from any third-party instrument that we're having are not getting saved in there.
Right.
So I just wanted to step on your toes there.
No worries. The additional things that happen is once a song mix is done, I have a folder just for all the mixes that occur. There's also what I call a multi-tracks folder. Mm-hmm. And that is where I take every individual track in a song session and export it with its sound. Thus, if it's a guitar track and it's running through a guitar amp, I'm exporting the guitar amped version of that track. If it's a virtual instrument like a piano or something else, I'm exporting that sound so that I have that raw sound without the mix, so to speak, on it. It's just the sound. So I have a folder of everything I call multi-tracks. And then, of course...
And that's the prep work that you do before you go to actually mix the session. Right?
Correct.
That's part of that workflow.
Yeah, it's part of the workflow of doing multi-tracks before going to a mix session. mind you, I now mix exclusively in Luna. And the problem with that is Luna copies files into the session file itself and gives it some ridiculously long string of letters and numbers as a file name. So you don't know what is what. And I've sent feedback to Universal Audio multiple times saying, please stop doing this. Please let me control the value, which is why I keep a multi-track folder, which is unfortunate in that it doubles the amount of archival space now needed because I have all those multi-tracks doubled in Luna as well. Luna just can't reference a folder and use those audio files, which is silly and kind of stupid. Beyond that, if there's a mastering session or I get masters back, I have a masters folder that contains all the masters and what volume level they are, what bit rate they might be, all that kind of thing, all in separate folders inside the masters folder.
Yeah. You know, as you're describing this, I imagine people listening to it and just go like, oh my God, talk about overkill. But it's like when you have a substantial catalog where you're dealing with a substantial number of tracks and years of doing this, when you have to go back and find something, should you go back and find something? And mm-hmm. also makes
And it will happen. Easy.
It will happen, right? It's easy to remember how we did something in the moment.
Yes.
But when you go back and it's been, you know, even if it's just a couple
of
weeks
or
whatever.
5 years.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it was that long, like, good luck. But if you have this at practice where you always do things a certain way, you're probably less likely to come across the, oh, we can't find this file. Mm-hmm. Having everything just in one place. And this goes back even a little bit more, I want to say, that when you set up your session, that's why you and I are, we're constantly talking about the naming conventions of things.
Sure.
Right? Whatever naming convention you use doesn't matter, but stick to one and use that so that you know what you're looking at.
Yep.
It's a joke at this point, but we say that it's the dreaded like audio one file. And it's like 300 files called Audio One and with the number in the file. And it's like, what is this? You know? Mm-hmm. So
it's the same problem with looking in the audio files of the package contents of a Luna session.
Yeah.
You go in there.
That's crazy.
And there's two files for every audio file. One is the actual audio file, and then another one is a JSON file. The craziness is they get some arcane name. They don't name it the channel strip. They don't name it what it originally was when it was imported, which is really dumb. They change it to just some random string. And it's really frustrating, extremely frustrating.
Let's say that there's an issue with the track. Good luck finding that when you got a session, when you got a few hundred of audio files with that name. Right? Yeah. You know, a lot of organization might sound like it's just unnecessary work, but it really isn't. Once you kind of get it into your habits, you'll thank us later when you have to go searching for something. And just keeping things organized and neat is just a way to really, really make the process easier. When you have to revisit stuff, if you do, it's a lot easier. When you're going to do that, hey, we're going to do the quad mix, or we're going to do the surround mix now. Now you have all your files available to you.
That would be the idea. The irony is when I first started, I don't know about you, I didn't think about this stuff at all.
No, of course not.
Zero thought.
No.
Thinking logic will never change to a point where it won't be able to open itself. The way I used to write and record things was haphazard. Oh, I'm going to do a guitar part now. Oh, I'm going to work on a drum thing now. Oh, I'm going to work on a vocal. Then I'm going to work on a keyboard. Then I'm going to work on another guitar. So the organization of the arrangement was just a gigantic mess. And of course, going through other people's projects, not let alone mine, in remixing things, you find that, holy cow, when you go back, it's like, how was I thinking about this? This is such a mess. When you organize your sessions such that you have, one, color coding, two, everything grouped together, three, file naming that makes sense, that makes it so much easier on the back end when 5-10 years down the road you have to open something, you'll be able to understand what it is you're opening and what was going on. Now, the reason why I mentioned exporting multi-tracks, that's a long-term storage solution, so to speak, because there will come a day when that plugin that you really love is no longer going to work, unless, of course, you keep that old computer that it ran on around healthy and able to run. If you don't...
Oh, God, been there. Yeah.
If you don't, you no longer have that sound. If you export the multitrack, you will at least have that sound as it was originally played in your session. If you don't do that, it may be lost to the annals of time, unless you can find somebody else that has that machine and that setup to be able to open it for you.
Yeah, and it seems like that file ends up being missing is always like an integral part or a hook of the song as well. So it's not like, oh, yeah, it's never like, oh, it's a string pad, you know. Mm-hmm. It's never that, because that's easy to recreate. That is a very frustrating thing, and I've done that several times, because plugin manufacturers go out of business, or there was a huge thing when Mac went from OS 9 to OS 10.
Oh, yeah.
Where certain
things didn't work anymore, and a lot of right. didn't get ported and moved forward.
Yeah, and
Fatmatic Pro, I'm looking at you.
Similarly, I guess, to a little bit of a lesser degree, when, you know, we're going to Apple Silicon now, mm-hmm. it takes some people to a little bit extra time to kind of port their plugins and things.
Sure,
they can run in like Rosetta and all this kind of stuff, and everything's fine and dandy. But a foolproof way is just to export those multitracks to your sessions. And it might seem like overkill, like we said, it really is a good habit to kind of get into.
Mm-hmm. And make sure you name things appropriately so that you know where to find them. I do it now where I group everything based on what group it goes into, plus the song title, plus who the artist was that did the particular piece, whether it was a name for the guitar player or a name for the vocalist or whomever. So I group bass to bass, I group drums to drums, I group guitars to guitars, I group vocals to vocals, and who it was and what that song is.
Yeah, I usually don't get that deep into the file names, but I have a structure that I always use, and it's always the same. But I try also not to write a book with it, you know?
Sure.
So, guitar, Les Paul, left,
no,
421.
No.
So
that's
it's not that.
Within the session file for that series.
Right. It doesn't have to be super elaborate, but just something that you know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Rhythm guitar, one, whatever.
Right.
It's absolutely fine, but you know what you got.
We both mentioned backups and that we're using a RAID system. I went to the RAID system, and I know we did an entire episode on this because you were contemplating going to a RAID system, I had been using a 3-format system where I had Blu-rays and prior to that, DVDs and hard drives. So I was using multiple different formats in order to save files. And you, I think, also use an off-site service, do you?
No, it's something that I contemplated as well. At this point, I tend to do the RAID system and possibly a separate drive as well for if it's like a certain project,
mm-hmm.
because drives are kind of cheap. So I'll just like, okay, here's for this. So I have like another copy right there should I need it. Just like you, I used to do the optical drives. I used to back them up to DVDs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Who has a DVD anymore, right? Or an optical drive anymore? Sure, I have one. It's just not a practical thing, as well as, you know, the physical limitations of a DVD drive. You know, it was like 4.6 gig or something.
Well, that's why I went to Blu-ray, get 50 gigs on there.
Right. It's often files can exceed that, so you end up with like one. I like the idea of an off-site storage.
Right.
I haven't jumped on one that I like. It's something that I've considered, and it's really, really morbid. But if you think about something should happen and everything burns down, it's like, it doesn't matter how many RAID systems you have.
That's
right?
True.
Because it's gone.
RAID burns, you're gone.
Right. I'm hoping that's not going to happen, but it is another option that you can do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people have all their stuff in like Dropboxes or iClouds or whatever. And sometimes I do that for smaller things, but it's not like I'm backing up terabytes of stuff to that, because that seems like a giant time suck. And sure, you just do it once. And I haven't jumped that gun yet.
I hear you. Well, let's move on to our Friday finds. Chris, what have you got this week?
Well, I actually did a find in my own plugin folder. It's the Opal Morphing Synth from UA. And it's something that when I got my interface, it was one of the many things they just threw at me. It's like, hey, feel good about yourself. But it's actually really cool. I started diving into it, and it's not just a normal synthesizer in that it just does like the usual waveforms. It has like wavetables and things that you can morph in between, and a fair bit of modulation capabilities. So it's one that I think that it was kind of cool, actually, what you can do with that. I've only scraped the surface of it, but I thought it deserved a mention. So again, that's like the Opal Morphing Synth from UA. And Jody, what do you have?
It's been an interesting week here with stuff being announced and put out. So I've got two things.
Oof.
The first is for guitar players, and that is Overloud has released what is known as Fluid IR, which goes a step beyond the standard IR of a guitar cabinet. And now they have the ability with their new player to include in the IR the harmonic structure and changes of what happens to a speaker over frequency range. It's pretty badass.
Wow.
And they have videos and everything that show what it's doing and comparing it to IRs that aren't done in what they call fluid IR setups. The other thing that's nifty about that is that you can take an IR that you already have and import it into Fluid IR, and their AI, apparently, will convert it to have that harmonic content. I don't know how good that is comparatively to having an actual IR of a speaker that's already been done right, but it sounds cool. And there is a sonic difference between the two. If you go to the Overloud site and check it out, it's a free upgrade for anybody that already has the TH stuff or the THU and their cabinet player. So go grab the Fluid IR stuff. And in a move that happened as of the taping of this episode, Eventide has released a update to the H3000 plugin, which includes new algorithmic changes and precision to how they mimicked an H3000 unit, plus lots of new presets that take into consideration all of this stuff. And anybody that knows anything about the H3000, you want that thing because it's a badass multi-effects processor that has been on tons of big hit records.
I think they updated the GUI as well on that.
They did.
Right? Both you and I griped on how it looked like it was from 98, the GUI. But
it's now updated and it's resizable, which is even cooler.
Oh, even better.
Yeah.
Even better.
While we've got your attention, we ask that you go to InsideTheRecordingStudio.com and sign up for our mailing list. You'll need to be on our email list to be eligible for any future giveaways, and we'll make sure you don't miss any future episodes of this awesome podcast. Send us an email at goldstar, G-O-L-D-S-T-A-R, at InsideTheRecordingStudio.com with the word sessions, and you'll get something cool back in your inbox. If you have a topic or suggestion like today's episode for Chris and I to explain in a future episode, contact us at the contact page and we'll put it into consideration for a future episode. With that, I'll say see you next week.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good one, Jody.